Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Thursday. It's, oh my goodness, here, September 5th. We've got 48 degrees currently here in Old Town Park City. Heber City reporting 49 degrees. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Nate Larson. Good morning.
We're Wasatch back overall, looking at pretty nice conditions again today. We saw the smoke and haze really fill in yesterday. Continuing to deal with those impacts as we've got northerly flow in place, so big fires burning north of us in Idaho and in Oregon, generating some of those smoky skies. A little bit of improvement. We've seen it thin out already this morning from yesterday. Temperatures in the upper 70s for Park City, otherwise sunshine is expected to continue. Heber looking at a high of 85 today. High pressure continuing to build in into the weekend. We'll keep temperatures above average. Overnight lows in the low 50s tonight for Park City, 82 for the high tomorrow, hanging out in the 80s for Saturday as well with quite a bit of sunshine, 83. Now with the ridge continuing to slide east and parking itself over the Four Corner area again, similar to what we've been seeing, it will scoop up more monsoon moisture, so we'll start to see increasing cloud cover late Saturday into Sunday. Do have a slight chance of a shower or storm late Sunday into Monday for northern Utah. Temperatures stay though in the low 80s. Will be 83 as I mentioned on Saturday in Park City and about 81 on Sunday. Not going to be a washout of a weekend by any means, with just that slight chance of a shower late Sunday. Better chance on Monday though as we get into the next work week. 81 for the high, partly cloudy conditions. Isolated storms are expected, clearing out through Tuesday and Wednesday. Temperatures really not changed with the high pressure staying in place. Low 80s expected to continue for highs. Overnight lows in the mid 50s. Heber City up to 88 on Friday. And we'll continue that trend into the weekend with those mid to upper 80s. Chance of moisture late Sunday as well, with isolated storms on Monday. Plan on temperatures staying above average next week with mid 80s continuing. After a chance of storms Monday, we'll see mostly sunshine Tuesday and Wednesday next week.
Okay, Nate, thank you.
You bet.
And on the phone with us, I believe I have Mia Yu from Wasatch Trails Foundation.
That's correct.
Okay, I didn't know who was calling in. I know that Laura's out of town. So, hi, Mia.
Hi, good morning. So for Basin Rec and South Summit, no updates there. All trails are good to go. Tour de Suds is sold out this weekend. So if you didn't get your tickets, then you're too late. Couple other updates from Park City. Mountain Trails Foundation, PC High School has a cross-country meet out at Quinn's Junction Friday between 6:30 a.m. and 7 p.m. So a lot of the parking out there will be tied up with the event. There will be a minor reroute on the out of the first time lot at Park City due to construction. And so keep an eye out for that. And then bike haul hours for Crescent are now Thursday to Sunday, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. until October 6th, and the Red Pine Gondola is done for the season. For us, everything in the Wasatch is good. We have some exciting news. There's a new trail up near Flagstaff Loop on the 45th Star Conservation Preserve, built by Bob Radke with Creative Trails. Part of the trail infrastructure for that whole preserve, it really needs some tires on it. So we're going to open it up, and we'll have it on Trail Forks in the next couple of days. But so people know, they can access it through the Flagstaff Loop right now. If you pedal out the Flagstaff Loop right before you start to climb up the double track road to get onto the Deer Valley side, if you look right, there's some construction, and then there's a trail on the right-hand side. You can access the connector trail, and then there's a loop that is more of a purpose-built trail for bikes. So some bigger berms and stuff like that. You can hike it or run it if you like, but it is more focused on biking. There will be more hiking-only trails built up there in the future. And we do ask that people use this loop clockwise, and also that people please, please stay on the trail and respect construction.
Okay. Hey, Mia, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Summit County Councilmember Chris Robinson. He'll recap yesterday's meeting. Mary Gwen Valinga, owner of Rise Boxing, will be joined by boxer Mark Gass with details about their upcoming Metal on Saturday at the Corner Store, and Park City Ski and Snowboard Director Rick Shimpino and Cross Country Director Emma Gerard with details about a couple of fundraisers, including Casino Night and the final Moose on the Loose series Trail Series Run. Then stay tuned for Cool Science Radio. This week, a look at astronomer Henrietta Leavitt, who in the early 1900s expanded our understanding of the universe by paying close attention to glass plate photographs of the stars. Then a conversation with University of Utah chemist and associate professor Louisa Whitaker Brooks. She talks about her research of ultra-thin electronic materials and nanoscale circuits. All of that coming up on Cool Science Radio. And of course, you can hear Cool Science every Thursday from 9 to 10. The Utah Olympic Park has applied to build a new 120-room hotel. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports that it would replace the existing Legacy Center.
The hotel has been envisioned since 2013 when the county accepted Utah Olympic Park's master plan, according to Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation President and CEO Colin Hilton.
So it'll be replacing what is one of the original buildings, the Legacy Lodge, and surround the pool. So it'll have a great atmosphere with the athlete training that's going on and our freestyle shows that we do throughout the summer.
He's excited because it can be a source of revenue for the park, which relies on an ever-shrinking endowment to stay afloat.
We already have some lodging up at the park, and that is our affordable housing project for athletes, coaches, and staff of the Olympic Park. That was our first foray into doing lodging, and this is a little more geared towards public visitors.
And for that reason, it'll be another asset during the 2034 Winter Olympics, which are expected to replenish the Legacy Fund's coffers when the Games return to Salt Lake City. Community Development Director Peter Barnes, Summit County's top planning official, calls the project a sign of the times.
That looks like a sign of things to come, the larger, more complex projects, and those that may or may not be influenced by upcoming future events in the Olympics.
The Legacy Center currently houses offices for UOP and Park City Ski and Snowboard employees, as well as athlete lockers. Those may be included in the new hotel or moved to a separate building, Hilton says. The UOP's contractor is Utah Development and Construction, and the park needs a conditional use permit for the hotel. That means it needs the approval of the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission. Commissioner Chris Conaby, a principal at Utah Development and Construction, has recused himself from past decisions to avoid a conflict of interest. Last September, commissioners approved two new ski runs for the UOP. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
On the phone now with a recap from yesterday's Summit County Council meeting, I have Councilmember Chris Robinson. Good morning.
Hi, Leslie.
Let's start with the Arts and Economic Impact Study. The Arts Council of Park City and Summit County presented that study on the impact of art locally. In that report, it says that art event attendees spend about $84 per person while here in Summit County. Any idea what sorts of events that number includes?
You know, I think it probably includes dining out and shopping, and it's probably not including lodging, but it was an impressive report in the sense, and I don't know if you looked at it, but it compares us with a lot of other, you know, sort of resort communities. And for a community our size of some 42,000 people countywide to generate $176 million in activity, And it was among the best performers if you look at it from a, you know, comparable population, and the tax revenues, the whole thing. It was very impressive, I thought.
Yeah, the study also had a category called personal income paid to residents. It says that the Summit County arts scene results in about $82.6 million in personal income. What do you have any idea? What does that mean?
Well, I think it means that we have a lot of residents that are dependent on a tourism economy, not tourism, on this arts economy, and that's how they make their living.
Okay. Just based on the arts scene, that is pretty impressive.
Yeah, it is.
And so we're talking about, what, gallery owners and artists themselves?
Well, I think it's that, and it's the ancillary services that go into it. You know, it's everything.
The study, a bit reminiscent of Mountainland's Affordable Housing Trust, economic impact of affordable housing. Do you need to hear that these events are economically valuable in order to support them, like the Arts Festival?
This is the first time this AEP, this is number six, but this is the first time we've seen one, and we've been supporting, you know, the arts without such a study for a long, long time. I think it's good information to know that it's an important contributor to the economy. I mean, we've been supporting them for art's sake, not as an economic driver. But I think it's good information, and we should periodically do it, gather the survey.
All right. And I guess, I mean, do we need to take since the organizations are really kind of creating a study that is self-serving, I mean, do we need to take that input with a grain of salt?
Oh, probably. It's not like we're making a decision to go longer on some initiative because we've seen the study. I mean, it's similar to studies like we'll see on the economic impact of Sundance. And, you know, I'm sure you could, you know, critics can always find fault, right? And question the motives of those preparing it. But I think they're good data points. That doesn't mean that we take them for gospel and that we're certainly not making important decisions based on the veracity of them.
All right. Moving on to the Board of Equalization, there were various property tax adjustments approved. One interesting thing was the auditor's office mentioned is that they don't have right of entry in Summit County's gated communities. So how does that make it more difficult to appraise the value of homes? I mean, do they need to see the home to know what it's worth?
I think in some instances, they do need to see them. I think in that report, you may have noted that there are two types of appeals, right? There can be one by the taxpayer, and it can also be an appeal or an adjustment made by the assessor's office. And in that report, the assessor's office was putting forward some increased values by you know, millions of dollars on two properties that fit into that category that heretofore hadn't been able to be reviewed in person. And so those new values, you know, an increase in value means that the taxpayer will get a new tax notice and have 45 days from the date of that notice to appeal it if they don't like it. Now, that was sort of news to me, too. And it's rare that we see an increase, you know, in the valuations on a stipulation. But that, as I said, was because it was driven by the assessor's office wanting to correct a discrepancy that they viewed was there because of a lack of access.
So if the assessor's office did need to get access, I mean, how would they go about doing that?
You know, I don't have a good answer there. There are certain handcuffs that the assessor's office has. We're a non-disclosure state, so they can't demand market data from buyer and seller. And whether they can force access, I don't know. I mean, they obviously got it in some fashion, but I'm not sure that they can demand it.
All right. Let's see. The Eastern Summit County Water Conservancy District, there was a code amendment for the newly created district on the east side. It's a charge of making sure wastewater is properly handled. This is downstream of a new state law that accelerates subdivision approval. So what changes were made?
Well, it streamlines the process before the governing body, which is the council, had delegated a lot of authority to this control board to review. And what this change did is it basically put it in the hands of the health department. director of the health department, that will allow it to continue. You know, the legislature is trying to streamline approvals and on construction, on approval of plans, and the other system was cumbersome. The ESAC will still, this board, ESAC's not the right acronym, will still be providing advice and reviewing wastewater systems, but it concentrates more approval authority in the health department.
So
which is where it is in a lot of counties, frankly, that if you want to develop where I've developed in other counties and I need approval for a water or a wastewater system, it's the health department.
So this new water conservancy district, I mean, what communities are we talking about it's serving, right? I mean, Camas has their own, I believe Oakley has their own, or no?
The municipalities have their own water and sewer systems, so Camas and Oakley are there. This is, when you say it's new, it's been around a long time. We recodified it in 2019, but it covers the unincorporated portions of the east side. On the west side, we have this Niobrara Basin Water Reclamation District that includes Park City. Park City doesn't have its own wastewater system. But on the east side, there isn't a monolithic system like that. There are either the municipalities doing their own thing, or there are developers like this Trail Ridge subdivision we approved of a few months ago, where they create their own wastewater system. And those systems have to be approved and overseen and operated by this district, paid for by the developer or the homeowners in the development.
All right.
We don't have a big system like we do here on the west side.
All right. And I guess, but would that also oversee then like the areas of Samak and Francis, and then kind of jumping over to the east side, Wanship, Hoytsville, and Colville?
Yes. Now some of those communities, like say Hoytsville, its plan might be to seek annexation into Colville City system and have, you know, either by interlocal or by actually annexing. That would creates land use issues, because then it's no longer in the unincorporated county. But yes, that in general, it's all of these areas that if you want to build, and there's cutoffs, if it's less than 10 homes, then it's one thing. You can use septic. If it's more than that, or if you're, you know, more than a certain number of homes, then you have to have collected sewer, commonly treated, and those systems have to be approved, reviewed and approved.
So it sounds like you think this is a good idea, that the new law, because it streamlines the development process. But my understanding was that the Planning Commission then plays a larger role and the County Council a lesser role in approval of subdivisions.
Yeah, I think I wouldn't go so far as to say it's a good law. What I'm saying is that it was imposed upon us. And some of the ripple effects are, how do we now, to meet the timelines in the new law for approval, deal with the wastewater side of it and the water and sewer side of it? And in order to meet those timelines, we had to streamline. I don't think that the tail here of the wastewater and the water is not wagging the dog. The bigger dog is wagging this. I think that it's, you know, we don't relish the fact that we've got a gun to our head to get the applications out the door. So I don't want you to think that we welcome the change. But on the wastewater and water side, we can adapt by putting more authority in the health department.
Okay. Let's see. Residents living near Hoytsville Road in Wanship appealed a decision by the Eastern Summit County Planning Commission. The commission said that they couldn't move their building pad to build a barn. And I'm thinking it was because it would block the neighbor's view.
This particular Fox Run, I think it's called, had like 2 to 6 acre lots, each one with a predefined building envelope. And the particular owner of this lot, the Anderson family, wanted to add a barn, and they sought approval to amend the subdivision plat to add some additional space, some 5,000 square feet, to their building envelope so that they could build a barn adjacent to the house. They went through one planning commission meeting in January where it was denied, but with advice saying, come back with some alternatives and we'll reconsider it. They came back with some alternatives in June, and they were yet again denied. And because the planning commission viewed the building envelopes were carefully crafted to protect views, and that adjusting them could impinge on views of neighbors. And so last night, county council reviewed de novo the facts and circumstances, and we believe we have come up with a way where the building envelope can be adjusted, maybe not as much, or maybe shifting the whole thing, reconfiguring it, doing so in a way that doesn't affect the views and still allows the property owner to, in a rural setting, to have a barn.
But it sounds like you didn't vote on that, and you've pushed the decision back.
We instructed the appellant, so the homeowners were appealing the decision by the Planning Commission. We instructed the appellants to get with their surveyor and to take some height measurements and come up with basically a site plan that allows us to view what we generally talked about, which we think will result in a situation that will work and not impinge on the views, and that we'll see that at a future meeting, and if we like it, we'll likely grant the approval, the appeal.
Okay. Anything else, Chris, you wanted to mention?
No, I think that covers it.
Okay. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Bye.
Summit County Council Member Chris Robinson, you're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, the Mountain Metal Boxing and Charity event is happening this Saturday at the Corner Store at Park City Mountain. In the studio with details, I have the owner of Rise Boxing, Mary Gwen Valinga, the sponsor of the event, along with one of the boxers competing, Mark Gass. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Mary Gwen, I think you go by MG too.
Yeah.
Okay. So tell us just a little bit when and where. I mentioned Saturday at the Corner Store. What time?
Sure. It's Saturday at the base of the Corner Store out on the patio. Ticket sales open at 5 p.m. and first bell is 6 p.m.
Okay. How much are tickets?
Tickets are $20 for adults, $10 for kids 12 and under. We have a couple tables left for 8 tickets for $500.
Okay. So what's going to happen?
It's going to be amazing. We have 20 fights on the card. It's all local amateur fighters from around the state. We have 8 fighters from here in Park City. We're doing this as a charity event, raising money for the Parkinson's Foundation, as well as our own nonprofit. We do scholarships for youth to box at a discounted rate. And then we also have a Parkinson's program. Parkinson's patients benefit from the therapies of boxing. And so that has been a really cool program that we've been doing for about a year and a half. And I wanted to find a way to involve all of the community and get the word out about that program as well.
That's interesting that that boxing can help with Parkinson's, but doesn't boxing also, a contributor to it? Or do we know?
I think that there's a little bit of a misconception about that because Muhammad Ali and some prominent boxers had Parkinson's, but at this point, there's really no real knowledge about what causes Parkinson's for the most part. I think, of course we want to protect brain damage, and without question, boxing is a sport that involves hitting to the head, right? But ironically, the numbers for concussions are far lower than football, soccer, hockey. So my goal is to also help kind of break some of the stereotypes and introduce great people who are all part of the sport and reword that narrative a little bit.
Okay, so you mentioned 20 fights on the card. So that means about 40 competitors?
Correct, yep.
All right. And how long, I don't know anything about boxing.
Sure,
so
yeah.
Yeah, so how, what would people see? I mean, with one fight.
Yeah, so we are part of USA Boxing. They feed the Olympic team, right? So that's an amateur 8 years old up to 40 can compete in that. So we have kids age 8 all the way up to 40 competing on the show. The younger kids compete for 3 1-minute rounds. And as you become an older and more elite fighter, you compete for 3 3-minute rounds. All amateur bouts are 3 minutes, or sorry, 3 rounds. So these fights are quick. They're 10 minutes. We'll move pretty quickly through them. And yeah, it should be pretty action-packed and a lot of fun.
And then the competition is done by age, or it's usually weight, right?
Yeah. So it is both an age and weight. You have to be within 2 years of your opponent. If you're under 18, above 18, anybody 18 to 40 can compete against each other. And then there's a weight limit depending on the size, from a 6-pound window up to a 10-pound window at the heaviest weights.
All right. So Mark, how did you get involved?
Well, so I joined Rise Boxing a little bit about a year ago, mm-hmm. I think it was. I've been, you know, involved in athletic activities all my life, moved to Park City about 3 years ago. And I was looking for a new challenge. I'm a big believer in people doing things for the first time and becoming, you know, a beginner at something, just to keep you alive and find new challenges. And, you know, I walked into Rise Boxing not knowing what to expect. And, you know, the welcome was amazing. It was a great experience. And I think I was drawn into, you know, the discipline and the consistency and the way, you know, MG and the rest of coaches manage the gym. And so one thing led to another, and this was a great way to put myself, you know, a goal, the same way that people that run, you know, may go into a marathon or a triathlon. For me, having this event was a great goal, and it's for a great cause. So, you know, I couldn't think of anything better to prove myself that the training and the consistency and everything we've put into the gym, you know, was a great chance to display all of that.
So is this your first amateur
That's
boxing
correct.
Competition?
Amateur debut on Saturday. Very excited. All my friends are pumped. You know, everyone in the community that I know are really excited to, you know, be there, contribute to the charity work, and also see the fight. It's going to be super fun.
Yeah. So talk a little bit, MG, about how does a boxing gym differ from what we would know at, like, Mark or Basin Rec Gym?
I think it's more similar than different. We run classes. Boxing gyms have two different modalities. One is an open gym model where you come at any time and a coach pulls you out, but the majority of the work is done on your own. We do a model where we run structured classes. So within that class, the coach is guiding you through it just like you would experience at any type of group fitness. For our competition team training, we do an hour of guided training and then an hour of that open gym training where athletes are getting their own individual work on the bag, jump rope, or things like that.
Yeah. So what makes a good boxer? I guess I've always thought it's just a matter of being quick, right? To get out of the way.
Oh, yeah. I mean, speed helps for sure. But, you know, I like to pull into that sweet science because it is a thinking man's sport by far. You don't get very far with emotion. You don't get very far with just brawn and muscle. So, you know, speed, timing, fight IQ, and conditioning, I think, are the four main components that you need to be a elite level boxer.
Yeah, and I mean, and I've heard about the conditioning for a boxer. I mean, it's very intense.
Yeah, it is.
To keep that quickness and the strength and the, right?
It's one of the few sports that you live in both an aerobic and an anaerobic state. So we are training short bursts of high intensity and explosiveness, but for a longer duration. And so the training needs to mirror that, but it is intense. And, you know, I kind of joke that you become a semi-pro runner while you're becoming a boxer because the training is really extensive.
Yeah. So how often do you train, Mark?
Pretty much every day, I would say, Monday through Friday, as MG was saying, different type of classes, different type of sessions, but every day, whether it's more cardio based or more, technique skills based, especially now leading up to the fight, it's been, you know, very consistent, 5-6 days a week, of training just to be ready from a skill set level, but also from a cardio and conditioning level.
Yeah, and I guess, you mentioned you've been in athletic sports, most of your life. What does boxing provide that maybe the others don't?
I think it's been a great discovery for me in terms of, you're used to obviously know you're going to have to be conditioned and athletic and strong. I used to play rugby for many, many years. But there's a thing about boxing that you don't know until you get involved, which is the skill level, the patience, the intelligence you have to use throughout a fight or throughout the round. Because it's not only about being the quicker fighter or being the stronger fighter, it's about using the tools at the right time, at the right moment. So sometimes you have to speed up your pace, sometimes you have to slow it down, sometimes you have to throw more, sometimes you have to throw less. And so just combining all of that, in a short period of time, in a way that you overcome the adversity that your opponent's bringing to you, is just an entire, different world for me. And it's been extremely, extremely challenging, but also extremely rewarding.
Yeah. I went to this event. It happened a couple of years ago. Have you been doing it every year?
No. So you went in 2019, and the goal was to do it every year. And then COVID happened, and we are just now getting back to putting on our next event.
Yeah, and I was really impressed. I mean, it's really a fun event. I mean, if you enjoy boxing, I mean, I just was kind of watching what was going on. But, I mean, it was a good crowd for that first year and just high-level energy, right? I mean,
yeah.
You had music playing, and just... So the rest of the competitors are coming from the rest of the state?
Correct, yeah. Yep, we have fighters from... We have one fighter coming from Idaho, but the rest are all local Utah athletes.
Yeah. Yeah, so you try to make it fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody got hurt.
No, it's incredibly uncommon in an amateur fight for there to be an injury. The officials and the reffing is geared towards keeping fighters safe at all times. So there's a 3-8 count rule. If your head is knocked back or if there's any perception from the ref that the fighter's injured, they get an 8 count. If they get 2 8 counts in a row, it's an automatic stoppage. If they have 3 in a fight, it's an automatic stoppage. And, I have 57 amateur fights. I competed at the highest level, and I have seen very few injuries or people getting hurt. In the pros, it's different for sure, but in the amateurs, it's a very safe sport.
Ah, okay. Yeah. And then because it's a sanctioned event, I mean, do you have to pay to host this, or does USA Boxing or something pay for, setting it up and paying for the referee and
sure.
Judges and things like that?
Yeah, we pay a sanction fee to USA Boxing. The refs and officials are provided by USA Boxing, so the local boxing committee. It is a volunteer-based committee. So the volunteers, we pay their gas mileage and we'll give them some food while they're here. But that sanction fee covers the refs and official usage.
All right. Yeah. And then why did the corner store work out as a good location for you?
We had a mutual connection to the manager over there, and he was just open to the event, and we think it's a great place to have it. It kind of, especially for the people coming from outside of Park City, I want them to experience Park City and the heart of it, and I think the corner store is a great place for that.
Okay. So how does the fundraising part work? I mean, the ticket price certainly, it probably just covers your sanction fee, right?
Yeah. The fighters have been tasked to fundraise, and they've been given an individual fundraising link and platform. We, within the gym, have been fundraising as well. Like I said, I have the Parkinson's program. Those people are helping spread the word. Well, actually, one thing I wanted to mention, we'll have a couple of the folks from the Parkinson's group hop in the ring and demonstrate some mitt work. I'm super excited to show just their ability and the skill that they've developed. And then at the event, we'll have a textable code and a QR code that people can make additional donations. And we're really trying to ask for small donations to, overall have a large impact over time.
Okay, well, tell us a little bit about yourself. I mean, how did you get into boxing and owning a boxing gym? You're one of very few females, I think, that actually own a gym.
Yeah, correct. I went same thing. I was an athlete. I had an injury and couldn't get back to the sport at the same level. I was an avid rock climber and was looking for a new sport. I went to a fitness boxing gym. I enjoyed the bag work, but I could tell I wanted more, so I sought out a traditional gym, and from the day I stepped in, I've been training 5-6 days a week, and I never anticipated it turning into a career, but over the years, I slowly transitioned out of my air quotes real job and began coaching and eventually opened the gym.
Oh, wow. So how many people do you have show up on any given day?
Oh, probably 100 or so through the gym, 120.
Okay. Yeah. And then again, you start kids as young as 8.
Yeah.
With mm-hmm. scholarship, you said, if they need it.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Anything else you want to let us know?
Yeah, one more shout out. I just want to mention that our scholarship program is supported through the Park City Community Foundation with Youth United. They are massive at getting, kids in sports in Park City, and they are critical in us being able to do our work. So I just want to shout that out.
Okay. Mary Gwen and Mark, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Park City Ski and Snowboard is hosting a casino night fundraiser along with the final race in its Moose on the Loose Trail running series. In the studio with details, I have Director of Snowboarding Rick Champineau along with Cross Country Director Emma Gerard. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Morning, Leslie.
Yeah, Emma, let's start with you. I believe this is the final race of the Moose on the Loose.
It is, yes. Okay. On September 14th.
All right.
This is the first time Moose on the Loose has done an event in the fall. It used to be 3 or 4 races that concluded in August, so we're excited to add this race in the fall.
Okay, so when and where is that going to happen?
So it is happening September 14th at Utah Olympic Park, mm-hmm. and it will take place on the trails there.
All right, and it starts what time?
9 a.m.
All right, and how much is it? I mean, you had a deal going for the 4, but now
yeah,
it's just
yeah,
a
it's
single.
Only $25, mm-hmm. which we think is pretty reasonable for a running race. And what we're excited about for this race is we are, in conjunction with Moose on the Loose, we're having a fall 5K that adults or anyone older than 14 can participate in. We did do the fall trail series last year, and so this is what we're doing this year to accommodate adults. And I think a lot of the parents that bring their kids to the race are super inspired by their kids, so then they can go out and also challenge themselves on the 5K course, and obviously open to any other, high school kids and adults. So we're excited to add that into the mix for the final race.
Okay, so it's the same trail. They'll all be running 5K?
So, no, the youngest kids will do 1 kilometer. So that's generally like 3 to 7 years old or 3 to 6 years old. And then it's all roughly. And then the kind of the next group 6 and up will do 3 kilometers. And then the Mighty Moose will do the 5K. So that's generally kids that are 11 and older. But these are just, the distances are just recommended per age group.
Sure, yeah. So have the races gotten longer along, or that you've kind of just stuck
with
that 1, 3,
and 5? No, they've been the same distance, mm-hmm. But we intentionally had this race being the last one because it's the most challenging terrain. So it's the last one was at Quinn's Junction, so a little bit faster race course for trails, a little bit more gravel and dirt roads, and then this one will be a lot more single track and elevation gain just because of the terrain at Utah Olympic Park. So we're kind of warming people up to this race.
All right, so can you register day of? It needs to be done before.
We like people to register by that Friday, so that would be Friday the 13th. That helps us out a lot, and you can sign up on go to mooseontheloose.run, or you can also find the registration link at parkcityss.org. So yeah, please, the sooner you can sign up, the better. And we do, bring the price up on the day of the event. And it's just harder for us to accommodate lots of people showing up day of and wanting to race, so.
Sure. All right, maybe just got a quick update on your cross country team. I'm guessing this is, the trail series is something you probably encourage your athletes to participate in.
Yeah, 100%. It fits really well with our mission on the cross-country team, and we love to see. We see a lot of our kickers and gliders and Devo athletes out there in the summer, and it's just a great way to see everyone again. We're kind of one big family, but we encourage kids from all sports or maybe kids that aren't in sports to come out and challenge themselves and hopefully get hooked on running. I think that's been, one of the coolest things to see. Quite the number of kids that come out and like want to run and have fun out there and challenge themselves. It's really cool to see.
So running is a good cross trainer then for the cross country Nordic athletes?
Yes. Yep. Yeah. That's one of the main things we do in the summer.
Yeah. And in terms of this upcoming season, registration underway?
Yeah, registrations open. We're about, you know, about half the people have signed up already. And you can find the registration also at parkcityss.org. And yeah, we're looking forward to winter. I think kind of one of the programs that's more likely to sell out is kickers and gliders, but we're not sold out yet. So if you did the program last year and want to sign up still, please sign up for it.
Okay. And what's that? What's the kickers and gliders?
Kickers and gliders is like our elementary school program. So they do skate and classic. We're mostly at White Pine Nordic. And yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Okay. And then you take the Devos. They're a little bit older?
Devos are more, middle school age. Mm-hmm. And we also train at White Pine, but we also go to Quinn's Junction, RTS Trailhead. We're so lucky to have so many great groomed public Nordic trails in Park City that we try to utilize all of them. We'll also go to Jeremy Ranch Nordic, too. So
great. Yeah. All right. Well, Rick, tell us about Casino Night. I don't recall one of these happening before, but maybe I'm wrong.
No, this is the first one, and we're pretty excited about it. So we're going to kick this off September 14th. It's going to be at Skull Candy headquarters, and it's from 5 to 10, so it's really just an evening of fun. There are going to be some games of chance, you know, poker and blackjack, but that's not really, if you're not interested in that stuff, you can come and support a good cause. So that's really what we're pushing here.
Okay. So, again, this is also happening on Saturday, September 14th. Tickets are how much?
It's $250, but you get an evening of fun and you get to, you know, meet the snowboard coaches and myself. And we're really hoping to engage the community and get people that maybe don't know what, you know, about what we do. And I'm sure everyone knows, you know, a kid on the team and stuff like that. So it is a little different for us, but we're putting it out there and we're hoping to have a good time.
Okay. And I know there's a discount as a couple, but what does the ticket price include?
So you get, obviously the evening, mixing it up with the team and the other families, and then there's going to be hors d'oeuvres, you know, kind of snacks, and we do have some people bringing some alcohol and stuff like that. So, you know, drinks and fun, and then that gets you an opportunity drawing ticket, and we have a couple of really great prizes. One of them is a trip to Florida, and then there's an evening at the Pendry there, the food spot out there at the Pendry, which we're all really excited of. I don't know much about it because I haven't been there, but I'm hoping maybe I'm in the drawing for that.
Okay, so the drawing, is that just for participants as opposed to those? It's not like you can just buy a ticket. A drawing ticket online.
Well, we're hoping they come. Oh. If they want to, you know, if they want to pay the money and they have something else to do, I think we'll put their name in the hat for sure. So I think, again, you know, it's different for us, but we're hoping to rally the community out there and have a good time.
All right. I think I read something about the mini skate ramp being open. Tell me about that.
So yeah, the Skull Candy headquarters, which I think in the community there's, you know, some allure. People drive by it all the time, but they're not sure what's in there. There's a pretty big common space, so we'll be kind of congregating there, but there is a little skate ramp in there. So I know some parents are already talking about bringing some kids to skate. We have a local friend, Morgan, who works at Woodward, who's going to come and help people if they want to try skateboarding. So that one's on you, but we're hoping, you know, again, people come out. And I mean, anytime I get to get in that building, I went to an avalanche class last season, and it's pretty neat in there. It's beautiful. It's got a beautiful, you know, view and stuff like that.
Okay. Well, how's dryland training going for the snowboard team?
You know, we're doing great. We're happy up at the UOP. We have our jumped airbag back, so it's a synthetic dry slope, and you jump into the airbag, and it's really the closest thing to doing those tricks on snow. So it's hugely popular. It's been gone for a couple years, and now it's back, and we've done some tweaks to it. So it's really, you know, hitting pretty good. Kids are learning tricks. I know the Mammoth team was in town. So that's a thing that, you know, draws skiers and snowboarders to the community to hit that. It's such a unique thing. We see it in our, you know, the freestyle sports that, you know, Japan has a bunch of airbags. There's a bunch in Europe, but you don't have to travel to those places. You can do it right here in Park City, which is pretty great.
Okay. Do you have anybody on snow anywhere at this time of year?
We are going to be heading out to Austria here next month, but for right now we're, you know, just kind of kids are getting back to school and that sort of thing. So, you know, contrary to popular belief, we have to, you know, make sure those kids get their school days in. But yeah, we're doing some dry land training. We had gear night at the UOP last night, so there were skis and snowboards up there. So you can really feel the buzz kind of starting up where people are, you know, talking about what board they're going to ride and what boots they're going to get and that sort of thing. But it's kind of a nice period for us right now. It's kind of the quiet before the storm.
Yeah. And then in terms of registering for programs, what do you guys offer on snowboards?
Yeah, we're up and running. Winter programming is open, and we have, you know, a little bit of something for everybody. It's really ages 7 and up. I think people see a lot of our, you know, more competitive teams, but there's kids that just come out and love to snowboard, and they'll ride on one weekend day or something like that. But yeah, the competitive teams are, you know, people are signing up. There's a lot of buzz around them. We never have many people sign up early in the season, and I think we have 20 right now, 10 of which are kind of new to our program, so that's really exciting for me.
Okay. Anything else you guys want to mention?
Yeah, just in regards to winter programming for cross country, another program I would love to put in a plug for is our club team for high school kids. So we have two options. Once kids go to high school, they can join the competitive team, which is 5 days a week, or they can do the club team, which is a couple days a week and is more focused on, you know, cross training for kids in other sports. And it's a great way to learn cross-country skiing and be with their peers, and we have some great coaches in that program, so people can find out more at parkcityss.org.
Okay. Emma Gerard.
Thank you.
Rick Schimpano, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Leslie.
You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, Park City plans to continue the waterline replacement on Main Street this fall instead of waiting until next spring. KPCW's Parker Malatesta reports the City Council today will also discuss some ranked choice voting.
Park City tore up Main Street this spring in the first phase of aging water infrastructure replacement. The city initially planned to continue the work next spring. Now, after hearing from Main Street business owners, the city has decided to resume the waterline replacement project at the end of September.
We brainstormed some different options, and one of them was to do some work this fall when things slow down a bit and try to, you know, get some things done so that next spring the work wouldn't be so impactful.
That's Deputy Park City Manager Sarah Pierce. On Thursday, the Park City Council will consider approving a $3.5 million contract with Silver Spur Construction, which completed the first phase of the project under budget. Construction would start again at the end of the month on 5th Street in between Main Street and Sweet Alley. That work would end by November 20th. Crews would then return at the end of March to tie in the new line to Main Street businesses. That work would last through June. The finishing touches would come in the spring and summer of 2026. At Thursday's meeting, the City Council will also discuss using ranked choice voting in the 2026 municipal election. Under ranked choice voting, candidates are ranked in order of preference, which eliminates the need for a primary election. In a single office election like the mayoral race in Park City, any candidate who receives more than 50% of the votes during the first round wins. If no candidate receives over half voter support, the candidate with the fewest votes is eliminated and votes for the eliminated candidate are reallocated to voters' next choices. The process is repeated until a candidate wins 50% of the votes. The process for multi-seat elections like the Park City Council is similar. The first candidate with more than 50% of votes gets a seat and is removed from the ballot. Then a second round of scoring determines the second place winner and so on. Proponents argue ranked choice voting streamlines the election process and eliminates the spoiler effect, where a voter prefers candidate C but votes for A or B because C is unlikely to win. A survey of Park City residents found some lack trust in ranked choice voting. Others express concerns about its perceived complexity. If the City Council chooses to move forward with ranked choice voting, a public hearing must be scheduled. The city must also inform the state it plans to use the new voting method by May 1st, 2025. Thursday's City Council meeting begins at 5:30 p.m. at City Hall. The agenda and a link to attend virtually can be found at kpcw.org. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
And the co-founder of two Heber-based companies, Probst Electric and Summit Line Construction, is facing felony charges in Idaho for a series of alleged hunting violations. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has more.
Idaho court records show 43-year-old Carl W. Studer has been charged with 5 felonies and 15 misdemeanors. The charges include unlawfully killing or wasting wildlife, molesting game animals with a motorized vehicle, hunting to spot wildlife from an aircraft, outfitting and guiding without a license, and more. In a 66-page affidavit, a senior conservation officer meticulously documented 20 separate occasions when Studer and his associates violated Idaho hunting laws, citing cell phone location data, text receipts, helicopter flight records, and other evidence. Fish and game officers received numerous complaints about a red helicopter molesting wildlife in the summer and fall of 2023.
Studer's preliminary hearing is scheduled for September 27th in Twin Falls, Idaho.